The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. This is Robert Graham, and I am filling in for Seth and Chris. The idea is to bring you information. If you are still working or just wrapping it up, maybe you're in the car right now. I've got to sit for a little while and hear my voice. Hopefully, I'll bring you some information that will work. Leading up to this segment, I talked about that secret sauce, right? How do you organize people to get people together so that you have the best possible outcomes? Again, when we go to elections, we want to win, right? I mean, there's no second place trophy. This is one of the hardest things for candidates to feel. When you go out there and you project yourself and you say, look, I'm the best for this job. I'm going to do the best I possibly can. I'm going to bring all your dreams to reality. They sell themselves. They get attacked personally. Their families get attacked. I mean, it's on and on and on. We see this with Trump. It takes a special type of human being to get there as it stands. But when you lose, you lose. Now, what happens if a Republican, let's say Kyrsten Sinema, were to win the Senate seat here in Arizona against our nominee? What does that mean to you? There's no second place for the person that tried hard. You may have a special feeling for our candidate loss, but the reality is we've lost. Okay, you've got a progressive in that office now, so what happens to our conservative values and our agenda moving forward? It's tougher, maybe impossible with something like that. So when you lose, you lose. There's no special outcome. So here's when we start talking about this vision, this Pied Piper kind of element that happens. You organize people with a vision and you do what you possibly can to have best outcomes. Now, to contrast the perfect outcome, I want to talk about Tom Perez, who's the Democrat national chairman back in D.C. And this guy is a lightning rod as well. He's a progressive. He tries as hard as he can to be as progressive as anybody. He cusses his brains out. I mean, the guy behind a microphone is pathetic. The fact that the left media never covers this guy, maybe it's because they would have to censor. There'd be more beeps than words if this guy gets up and talks. He is fired up and he's wanting to shake up the world. Well, here's the interesting thing. He came out and he endorsed a candidate for the governor of New York against an incumbent Democrat. So Cuomo is the governor, right? He's running for re-election. He endorsed this woman named Cynthia Nixon, who is actually an actress. If any of you have ever watched Sex and the City, she was in that show. I mean, that was not one of my playlists here. But the reality is she's there. Now you know who she is. So she has influence. She has some name recognition. She's out there doing it. Well, this was extremely uncharacteristic of the Democrat National Committee to come out not only to endorse but to go against an incumbent. So he's getting thrashed by the Democrats from within and the progressives. He comes out and defends himself and goes, wait a minute. She's a progressive. She's the one we need. And she defends. Now, the vice chair of the Democrat National Committee, he says, wait a minute. Cuomo's a progressive. He raised minimum wage to $15 an hour. And he's the one that legalized gay marriage in the state of New York. He's a real progressive. So they're fighting for who's the most progressive. But what this tells you is, where is the leadership within the Democrat Party? Is it Hillary Clinton? I don't think so. Is it Cory Booker? No way. Is it Kamala Harris? No way. Is it Oprah Winfrey? No way. Right? There's no unified voice. So what happens in parties is all these people sit back and they, like, let's just say they despise, these progressives despise our president, which I think is a fair assumption. And they sit back and they think of the best ways to take him out of office, right? Let's win this election. Let's do this. Let's make life difficult. Win the House. Impeach the guy. Win the Senate. Make the impeachment stick. Let's get this turkey out of office. And they work hard to do it, right? Well, what happens is when you see this nation as a whole and all these different groups, every one of these leaders have ideas. So you have all these leaders popping up with a version of victory. And then their victory versions don't always line up, so they collide with each other. So remember when we talked about the wave? People keep saying this blue wave. And I've heard Chris and Seth say, hey, there's no blue wave. Well, the reality is there might be a wave, right? And it may be growing. We manage to see it right now. Like I said, I get paranoid in election cycles because I don't know what I don't know. I don't know what I can't see. But one thing I can tell you for certain is if you create barriers like the Great Barrier Reef, or if you have boulders in the wave line of like their path as it's coming toward the beach. If you have obstacles, docks, fence posts, you name it, that wave has to come apart. It doesn't have the effectiveness that it once had when it was growing. But as soon as it strikes obstacles, it starts to dissipate. Well, they're creating organically their own obstacles with all these people standing up and saying they're going to lead. Now you've got Perez. You've got this infighting. And this is close. Look, we are in the middle of the election cycle, and the DNC is trying to figure out if that guy can be their leader. So how do you raise money when the DNC can't even put it together? So that's great news for all of us. But now what it does is it turns us inward and we say, how do we win? How do you become that Pied Piper? What do people want? Jobs, opportunity, prosperity, and safety. Great education. They want those things. They want national security. They want jobs. They may have a different path to get there, but the idea is to be convincing for you to get there. Finding leaders to be able to stand and to articulate in a meaningful way the best outcome. Now, endorsing in a primary is not necessarily going to do that. We have late primaries, so it's so tough in Arizona. But what happens is when we find a nominee like we did in President Trump, one of the most frustrating things for me was Senator Jeff Flake and his just barrage on general election candidate Donald J. Trump. It was just like, take a breath and realize you get Hillary or you get him. And at that point in time, people literally would have that discussion because maybe they didn't like either one. I liked the president, and I saw him personally and knew him personally and knew what was going on and what was on his agenda. So it was comfortable for me. Other people didn't get that window. So it was like one thing or the other. And then most people came over. They got it. Now they're happy they did it. But some just stand on the sideline and do it. Once a person becomes a nominee, there is your person. That's who we follow. That's who we get behind. That's who we fight for. Republicans, I believe that we leave it up to the voters in the primaries. The voters will tell us who the best person is. We go to that person and we fight hard. We don't always win, but the reality, it's there. So how do you get there? How do you get a message? Well, one thing about Republicans is we're extremely logical, right? Give me a cell in a spreadsheet. I'm going to show you how to balance a budget, right? You hear these discussions and then you hear like Paul Ryan gets up there and he starts talking about the budget. And you're like, oh my gosh, you start to fall asleep. What he's telling you is factual and accurate as it relates to the budget, but it doesn't motivate you. It doesn't bring you along. Where's the relevancy in it? When we talk about $21 trillion deficit, what does that mean to you? Really? Oh, yeah, my share is $67,000, whatever the number is today. That still doesn't mean much to me because I'm not writing a check every single month for that. But when you start talking about solutions for the single mom raising three kids, say, I'm going to find you a job. Okay, because I'm going to bring great policy into this country, into the state. And when I do that, you're going to have a better job today so you can take your head out of your hands and have confidence that you're going to be able to pay your bills at the end of the day. That is how you're going to move her. Okay, it's not going to be talking about immigration, things like that. She right now wants to protect her family. So it's identifying and understanding the message that needs to come to each of the people. If it's a veteran that is disabled and has major issues because of X, Y, and Z, when you start talking about VA vouchers and you start finding solutions to help with mental health and physical disabilities, maybe physical therapy, who knows, family caregiving and bereavement and such, pain therapy, you name it. This person sitting there nodding their head saying, that's what I need. I'm so happy you're talking to me. Now, it can't be shallow promises. It has to be intentional and it has to be literal. In the sense that people can see this. But what happens is if you collectively look at our candidates on a national standpoint and here locally, what do they say? They're service-oriented. They're focused. Not all of our Republicans have been great. Oh, come on. I mean, I get it. They promise, promise, promise. They get in office and people say, well, I've got to govern, so I have to get reelected. Well, how'd you get elected in the first place? You dug in on principles and values you cared about. You didn't have to split hairs or straddle the fence to get elected. They forget that. And they forget that they actually had to stand for something at the beginning to get the Republicans, but also the other people to vote for them to get in office. So what we have to do is make messages relevant to people. Personalize it. You can talk about balancing a budget, and you could talk about the general welfare of a family in very specific stories. And the more and more that our party or the conservatives start to recognize that just because we have the right formula, that doesn't mean our membership's going to grow or that we're going to convert people to us. We have to invite them, and we do that easier. We build relationships of trust when people understand that not only do we listen to them, but we understand their story because we just shared a story that was similar. I had that family. My mom was a single mom raising three kids. I can tell you a bunch of stories, and I can sure tell you a lot of stress that she went through trying to make ends meet when we were kids. And so when I talk like that to an individual, or when a candidate talks, or a neighbor talks, and when you start to share the message of Make America Great Again and show people how the president's policies are impacting those things that they care about, guess what happens? You convert people and bring them along. I wish I had some really dynamic, complex story to tell you, but it's really that simple. Repetition, endurance, invitation, messaging, relevancy. Pull them all together, you have great outcomes. And the reality doesn't take much. You don't need the complexity. Unfortunately, people look for the complex solution, and if it's too simple, they won't do it. Well, I'll tell you what, simple works, emotion works, facts work. Tie them together, and guess what you have? You have the best outcome for the conservative movement in this country. And isn't that what we're about? Bringing to pass the best possible outcome for people using the governing principles that we care deeply about. And when we come back, I want to play a little snippet of President Trump's his address at the U.S. Naval Academy during graduation. Fantastic. You can't miss it. It's great. There are more than 18,000 children in Arizona's foster care system, and there's critical need for foster families to care for these children across the state. When you foster a teen, you won't change their life. They'll change yours forever. Caden changed my life forever. Caden came into my house 2.5 years ago as a foster son, and he became a brother to my kids, my 5 kids. He became my son. He became my wife's son. We had challenges, struggles like any particular family does, but he got to experience everyday life. Look, just having dinner at the table with a family is something that many of these young people have never, ever, ever experienced. They don't really understand accountability in different ways. They protect themselves. They kind of come within. They don't have this everyday experiences that we have in families, the togetherness. Hey, well, there's conflicts in families. We know that. But at the same time, there's solutions and there's love. There's embracing. I don't think Caden was hugged that much when he came in our family. Today, I got a great hug from Caden. When you bring people into your home, you inspire them. These teens need inspiration. They need perspective. And they, more than anything, they need love from you. And so the challenge is there. I talk a lot about miracles. If you want a miracle in your life, bring a teen foster into your life. It'll change you forever, and it will change them forever, and you'll have the remarkable miracle of doing something great. Teensneedyou.org. That's where you go if you're interested. If you want a real miracle in your life and you want to be touched in an intimate and personal way that'll change you forever, teensneedyou.org. It'll change the life of that individual as well. Caden, I love him. I care for him. He is a member of my family, and it's all because we were willing to take a foster teen into our home. Hey, welcome back, everybody. This is Robert Graham filling in for Seth and Chris on the Seth and Chris Show on 960 The Patriot. Hopefully you're having a fantastic day, and the day was good to you. So most of you are heading home right now. Some of you are still working. I pray that you're safe and enjoy the ride home. Hey, this is a great time to talk about Memorial Day that's coming up. We live right near the Arizona National Cemetery for the Veterans Cemetery. And on Memorial Days, it's really fantastic. If you ever have an opportunity to get up and get your family up there early in the morning, I would say get them up there at 7 in the morning, maybe a little bit earlier. And what happens is they have American flags that you can press into the ground just above the headstones throughout. My son just did his Eagle Scout project there and cleaned probably 1,200, the people that were there, about 1,200 headstones, and just to take care of them, just to honor them. And it's great because as people are cleaning these headstones, they read them, right? So the name of the individual, who they served, where they served, what they served. On top of the headstone, sometimes you'll see coins. And the coins, if they are pennies, they served with them. If they're nickels, they mean something else, dimes and quarters. But generally speaking, they had different levels of service. So maybe they were in the military at the same time with them. Another coin was how much time they're in combat or what have you, and so on. But it's awesome because they get the stories. When people came back to turn in their brooms and to check out and stuff like that, I would hear families talking about the stories of what they read. They also, depending on your religion, whether you're Jewish, you're Mormon, you're Catholic, you're Lutheran, what have you, you'll see on some of these headstones the religious symbol on some of these headstones, so people self-identify with them. So it's just amazing. So the memorial's there. My grandfather served in World War I and World War II. My uncle, who is, again, much, much older than my mom, like 26 years difference between my mother and my aunt, he served in World War II. My father was in Vietnam, and he was a physician, so a little different dynamics, but service nonetheless. Both of my siblings were involved in the Gulf conflicts at the beginning. My brother was a Marine and my sister in the Air Force. Now my son's in the Navy and he's at the Naval Academy, but he's on the USS Porter and he's over in the Mediterranean. What's really interesting is, I don't know if you've seen the reports, but they are literally being trailed or tailed by Russian ships, and they keep deploying Russian aircraft that keep buzzing the USS Porter. The USS Porter is the one that sent the missiles into Syria in 2017, and they were involved in this last strike. So now they have an accompanying aircraft carrier, and they keep chasing these Russian jets away. So this is happening today, but it's this memorial that happened. But I want to play the president's remarks at this graduation ceremony that are just awesome. So I am, let me get there real quick and make sure that I'm not getting sound from something that shouldn't be giving a sound here. And so let me get back. Here we go. You ready? Let's play this.
We are witnessing the great reawakening of the American spirit and of American might. We have rediscovered our identity, regained our stride, and we're proud again. Yes, they're respecting us again. Yes, America is back. The best way to prevent war is to be fully prepared for war. If a fight must come, there is no other alternative. Victory, winning, beautiful words. To the class of 2018, I do say strive for excellence. Live for adventure. Think big, dream bigger. Push further, sail faster, fly higher, and never, ever stop reaching for greatness.
Amazing speech. Here he is, and he's recognizing these midshipmen. They've worked hard. Now what they're going to do is they're going to leave this school. And if they go through the Naval Academy, they do 4 years, and then they have to commit 5 more after that. So these are our commissioned officers. They're going to be navigating ships. They're going to be nuclear submarines. Some will be pilots. Some will be Navy SEALs. You name it. But this is our defense quadrant. These are some smart, brilliant young people, and they're going out to do this. And what a remarkable address here. The other thing I want to touch on, and maybe this is just a little sidebar here, but a good friend of mine, when you think about the veterans that are, you have PTSD, you have other physical disabilities that happen. They are injured horribly and they need help. And a lot of times they go and they move home and they don't have the help. So a good friend of mine named Charlie Ellis started a group called Operation Enduring Gratitude. And he literally sent me a message, you know, in the sense of Memorial Day, and says, veterans in need of cement wheelchair ramps. So if somebody needs a wheelchair ramp, they can get it absolutely free from Charlie's group. So Operation Enduring Gratitude. So if you search it on Google, you'll find it. And I tell you, he's a great guy, and they do great work. And what a cool blessing. Again, great people have given so that these guys can go do this for free for our veterans. When you think about what's happening, what we have to protect out there, we talked about the elections. We talked about the different cycles. We look and we roll around this environment and we say, man, we really, 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 really have to have the best outcome as it relates to elections and the cycles. Now, in Arizona, we just saw this great big movement, the Red for Ed movement. Now, this was interesting for me as I sat back and watched. Now, as far as the teachers, the good teachers getting raises and good compensation, I'm there. Right? I want to see it. I think that they deserve it. I think it's a thankless job in many ways, but it's a remarkable blessing in our kids' lives when we see these kids come home and they're inspired and they've been educated. My son Jackson, who I didn't really think was the science guy, had just won the Arizona State Science Fair this year for the whole state of Arizona in physics, and I can't remember what the other, maybe it's environmental science, but did a fantastic job. Made a little, but actually working desalinization unit. It's a elliptical deal that uses the sun to desalinize water, and it has a whole mechanism, and it does it. It's pretty fantastic. And when I see that, and I see him being inspired to do that by great teachers, I want those great teachers rewarded in every sense of the word. The problem with this whole movement is it became bigger than the teachers' pay. I really believe that the teachers were used as pawns in this thing. And that is not a good feeling to have somebody like me say that they were used as pawns. They talked about their increase in wage, but how about those other things that were on the list? The support staff making more money, bringing things back to certain levels. Now they're asking for more. And then what happened with the vote? Red for Ed should be Red Republicans for Ed, because I don't know if you know how the vote went down, but the Republicans voted this thing. Every single Democrat voted no on this. If that doesn't frustrate you, I don't know what does. I mean, the teachers were used as pawns, they're using as political wedges, and then the people that said they were with them weren't with them, and the people that were working through solutions voted in favor of them. So it's, to be clear, we got to make sure we do it. We'll be right back after the break, and you got to know, is the movement going to impact elections? Oh, man. Welcome back, everybody. This is Robert Graham filling in for Seth and Chris on the Seth and Chris Show. And the goal is to bring information. But I'll tell you what, I hear music like that, I just want to relax and chill on the ride home. I'm certain that most of you might be hoping to do that as well. Again, I hope you had a great day at work today. We've been talking a lot about elections. We've been talking about the different leadership, we've talked about negotiation strategies. We've talked about movements. Going into the break, we were talking about Red for Ed and that movement with how I really think that teachers were used as pawns. And again, you have teachers that are motivated by the value of increasing their wages, and many of them deserve it, put the time into it, what have you. Some, in my mind, are just bad teachers, and I can't ever justify why you give blanket raises to any particular group. It should be merit-based. And how do you judge a teacher? I know people say, oh, you can't do it by test, can't do this. There's so many reasons why people can make excuses that you can't do merit-based compensation, but the reality is there's got to be some mechanism, some metrics out there. But nonetheless, the Republican governor, the Republican legislature passed this. And what happens is now the liberals, the progressive liberals, the union thugs like Joe Thomas, people say he's not a member of a union. He's a member of a union. What do you think the Arizona Education Association is? It's not some little group that's been organized. He's in hog's heaven right now because he's got people actually know his name now, and he's been able to take this sleepy state and do something with it. But what the problem is, and what I'm trying to do with each of us, is to remember that the Republicans solved this. Now you have the D's out there claiming victory. They didn't vote yes for it. They were obstacles. They figured that the R's would have enough votes, so they were all going to unify by voting no to support them for yes. Okay, are you confused? I'm totally confused. If you want to call in and weigh in on this, how do you feel about this? 20% raise? Have you had a 20% raise? 602-508-0960. Now, I'm not suggesting that I'm against it. What I'm going to tell you is credit should be given where credit is due. You can organize. David Garcia can ride around his bus and act like he's the man and try to run for governor, which, man, I'll tell you a story. It was interesting. When I was chairman, one of the things that motivated me so much against Garcia is that we were in an election, and he was, I mean, literally, it's election night, and he gets up there and gives this speech and says, oh, all these great things are going to happen, and Democrats are doing this, and he goes, hey, can you throw me that? And somebody threw him a broom up on the stage, and when they threw him the broom, this is just when he became the nominee. He gets up there and he starts sweeping the stage and says, this is what's going to happen to Republicans at the end of this election. We're going to sweep everything. I could not sleep then. I was dead tired. Just worked through a primary. I was like falling over, and I stayed up all night plotting how we were going to win these elections and have the good outcome. Now he's out there using the teachers as props. He's driving around in his bus with his name all over it. Not Red Fred, his name all over it, using the teachers as props. I want the teachers that are listening to me to recognize that. Now, look, a lot of you are motivated because you're driven by the value that you bring and the compensation you believe you need. But here's the other dynamic that's happening within the state. You're seeing lawmakers now that are pushing back on the narrative. And they're saying, look, it's not us. It's your administration, for heaven's sakes. When you see what's happening within each of the school districts and how they're allocated funds, there's an absolute argument that the districts aren't moving the money to the teachers, or the schools are not moving money to the teachers. You can see it. You have to dig for it, but you can see it. Next week, I have an opportunity to meet with some folks to discuss legislation in our state that is likely a really smart thing to do. Ohio, you had a treasurer of Ohio, a guy named Josh Mandel, and he put this system in place called the Ohio Checkbook. Now, this is my absolute favorite thing to talk about. When you talk about this compensation dynamic and you have lawmakers pointing at the school district saying it's your fault they're not getting paid, then you have teachers and you have guys like Joe Thomas pointing at the legislature because they're trying to make a political stance. Earlier, we talked about posturing in non-election cycles. That's what they did with this Red for Red. They tried to make the governor look bad and they tried to make Republican lawmakers look bad, even though the Democrats voted no for everything. He came out with this open checkbook. I'm looking at it right now. I'll post this on there. There's a tab where you can hit local government and schools. Okay, so you click on this, and then it shows like an overall general budget, and then you can dive down into the districts and the schools. We come back from the break. We're going to compare. How do you run your budget at home? If you have so much money you plan on spending on a monthly basis, what happens if you go over that number? Are you held accountable? Can you do that very long? Do you go so much in debt that it flips your household upside down? Well, how about overrides and bonds? Let's just go out and get an override bond to help provide for my household. Does that work for you? When we come back, compare your reality with what's happening in school districts. I'm going to share this with you. You're going to love this. And I think this is one of the things where we start calling our legislature and saying, what? You need to incorporate this because we demand transparency with our taxpayer dollars. We'll be right back after this break. We'll make the comparison and see how you check out with Open Checkbook. Hey, it's Robert Graham. Here we are back with the Seth and Chris Show on 960 The Patriot. The goal is to have best outcomes. It's funny when you play the Labor Day weekend to San Francisco. That's not where I'm going because Nancy Pelosi lives there. And unfortunately, she's been making news again. She calls herself the master legislature. And I think to myself, who in the world gives himself a title like that? And somebody gave some flattering questions. And she goes, you mean you want me to brag about how great I am and I'm the master legislature? She went through it. And I was waiting for the smile and she didn't quite do it. She just owned it. Anyway, we were going into this. We went to the break. I was talking about transparency. So you have this, you know, he said, she said, point the fingers, lawmakers, or is it the administrative bodies that are doing this? Some districts have multiple assistant superintendents that make well over $100,000 a year. They have, in some cases, more than that, over $200,000 a year. Some have driving or what they call like car allowances. They have other reimbursements. They have other perks associated with it. And the question is, when I'm as a business guy, I look at things and say, can we operate this a little bit more efficiently? Maybe. In the Paradise Valley School District, there was a time after the recession where we saw this out-migration that was pretty significant. We saw a lot of people moving out of the Paradise Valley School District, but then we see the district come back around and ask for an override. I'm like, wait a minute, so your student count is lessening. Now, remember, there's a per student allocation that each of the schools get. So they are literally hemorrhaging resources. But the theory is if you're servicing less students, do you need less money? And so instead they go out and try to get overrides and they try to get bond issues. And if you look at this, one of the things that happened in the Paradise Valley School District again years ago, I can't tell exactly when, but the internet was significant and we had information online. They talked about the cuts and they said, go here, see what will be cut in your kid's school if we don't get this override. So I went there and I started thumbing through and I started going to the page where it showed the cuts, library, art programs, music programs, this extracurricular, that, this extracurricular, this, like STEM, you go on and on. It was like, wow, there's like big cuts. I was waiting somewhere for them to come back and say, here's where the administration is going to make a cut. Here's where we're going to have to tighten our belt in the home office. We're going to have to reduce some of these director-level positions. We're going to have to reduce some of these assistant superintendents. It's going to make our workload very hard. Our job is to service the schools, and if we don't have the admin to do it, it's going to be more difficult. I would have loved a story like that because it shows that people are literally tightening their belts. Now, remember, when you're in control of a checkbook, you're in control of the checkbook. If you are in control, absolute control of your financial outcome during hard times, would you cut your compensation or somebody else's first? Now, that is calling into questions people's integrity and maybe their determination or drive or their intentions. But the reality is that people think in terms of financial security. We talked about that earlier as a motivating factor when it becomes very relevant to somebody. It means different things to different people. But if a superintendent looks at his wage or her wage and says, well, I can cut it or not, and she says, I'm going to hang on to this. I'm going to make these other cuts first. And then if we have to, it'll come back up to me. Because why? Financial security and such. So here goes. Josh Mandel comes out. He's the treasurer. They create a program called OhioCheckbook.com. And what I did is I went to local gov and schools just now. And then it shows me like a map of all these schools. And you see like a little bubble and it says 2 schools, 30 schools, 50 schools. Click on that. And the map zooms in. You keep clicking and it gets down. So like right now I'm looking at an area in Ohio called Windham. I click on that. There's 2 schools. And now I have Windham School that popped up. And there's another one that popped up. And so I'm going to click on Windham. Now when I click on Windham, it says WVFD Joint Fire District. View the checkbook. This is a school. Now, this is a specific school. I click on view checkbook, and guess what I'm looking at? The general ledger, the checks that are being written daily right in front of my eyes right now. Awesome, right? Why is this important? Because it gives transparency. When you start to measure people's performance, guess what happens? Performance improves. If they have to measure the performance and report back to somebody like you and me, the taxpayers, their performance accelerates. So now you start to see people finding what? They start to innovate. They start to create. They start to figure out other ways to raise money or to spend money. They become much more prudent. Gosh, I can't even talk. As it relates to spending, because now they're held accountable for how they spend, right? If somebody lends you a few bucks because you're having hard times and you go out and buy like a Lamborghini or something, I mean, they come back, they're going to look at you like you're crazy man, right? Or crazy woman, because you're not being a good steward of the resources they're giving you. When people are watching, it's much harder to just kind of do it. Just go through the routine because you're going to be accountable. If you go through this, it has fire protection, capital outlays, emergency medical services, highways, administrative, all tied into this. Education, instruction, all tied into this open books. And what's great is they can tell you without a doubt. When you say, well, I don't know, is it the school district or the lawmaker? They can say, ah, look, school district. You look on this page, click here, do this. There you see it. And guess what happens? The teachers then redirect their anger or their frustrations or their letdown at the people that are actually administratively doing it. I believe strongly in the state of Arizona that the administrations are not getting the money to the people. Not in every case. You have some remarkable school districts. Like Phoenix Union, they pay their teachers. The average teacher salary in Arizona is like $48,000, and I believe they pay their teachers close to $63,000 on average. They get a little different diversity allocation, but the reality is they pay. Then you have a group like Alhambra, it's closer to $58,000, and they actually get less than groups like Cave Creek School District. They get less money per student, and they pay their teachers almost $12,000 more than the teachers make in Cave Creek. So is that an administrative thing or is that a lawmaker thing? That's an administrative thing. So again, transparency helps us make smart choices. Are you going to scratch Red for Red on your vehicle? Maybe you should. But let me tell you what Red for Red means for me. I, for many years, as a Republican my whole life, and then as a chairman, I wear red. And I wear red to signify the Republican Party. In this case, Red for Red should be the Republican Red. Because the Republicans helped define the solution, create the solution, budget the solution properly, and they voted in favor of that budget. They got criticized for doing the cuts and doing things, but they wanted to find the solutions for the teachers. They knew that the teachers were being used, but they still found a solution that was led by Governor Doug Ducey. So Red for Ed, the movement and the motion and the magic came from the Republicans. So the Democrats, if they try to own any element of this, You, as a listener, need to hold them accountable. Blast them. Say you are a complete liar. How did you vote? Just ask that question. How did you vote for the new budget for teachers' increases? Oh, you voted no? Why'd you vote no? Because I was in support for them. Okay, so you're no for a yes? Come on. Okay, this is honestly what they're trying to say. And the people, the constituents in their respective districts are having a hard time understanding or figuring out really what it is. So get ready, people, because I'll tell you what, in Arizona, there's going to be some strong campaigning to bring the truth to the people. And so this is it. But transparency rules. If I were you, pick up the phone. Go to azledge.gov and find all your lawmakers in your district and email them. Say, we want this. Again, OhioCheckbook.com. There's a couple other states that may have it even better. A lot of them are real time, and that is cool. The technology's there. Why aren't we using it to show transparency? And guess what it does? Saves us some bucks so we can bring better teachers, build better schools, do more for our teachers, have great outcomes. This is Robert Graham. You're listening to Seth the Chris Show. We'll be back after the break, and we're going to wind it up in so many ways. And we're going to talk about making America great again and finish off with my little tribute, again, to Memorial Day. We'll be right back after the break. Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Robert Graham on Seth and Chris Show, and I'm filling in, and these guys are doing good stuff. They're out with their family and friends and busy, to say the least, but I hope they're having a great weekend. Hope all of you have a great weekend. This is a great time to remember those that have gone before us. I mean, I think about when I go to, we talked about the Veterans Cemetery a little bit before, but when we talk about Memorial Day, and I think it's fitting to wrap it up today in talking about the Memorial Day, as many of you might be in your cars traveling north or going to the beach, going west, maybe you're going south down into Mexico, who knows. But just recognize that really we have what we have as a result of very brave people. There's stories around the national anthem, obviously. If people really know the story behind the national anthem, they would never kneel. They would never disrespect that anthem. If you think about the people that have gone before you that were wounded, injured, gave their lives for us so that we could have this liberty and freedom. Think about the preamble of the Constitution, where the preamble of the Constitution has a line. It's probably one of my favorite lines, is secure the blessings of liberty. And that is such a powerful consideration. The forefathers knew that that word liberty was such a critical element in everything that we talk about. So today we talked about North Korea. We talked about Iran a little bit, this hegemonic cycle. We went into campaigns. We talked about vision and communication. We talked about how to message to people with relevant messages to bring people along. But the one thing we have to remember is, what are we fighting for? The liberty, right? Far too often, people sit idly by as things slip away from us. And we can't do that. This is an election cycle. Guess what? Next year, we're going to be ready, getting ready for the next. And the next year, we're going to get ready for the next. We have to fight and endure to protect the principles and values that we care deeply about. Do you want to have an outcome that you care about? Do you want religious liberties in your life? How about civil liberties? Do you want people telling you what you can buy and what you can't buy? Or do you want to be able to live in a free society to make choices and live with a moral character that helps to direct and dictate the life that you care deeply about and those around you? Again, so much is happening, and politics has a way to sour people and take people into the dumpster. And it shouldn't do that for you, because remember that with every single candidate that makes a promise, if you believe them, it's your job to hold them accountable. Fight hard for them, help them get elected, but also hold them accountable. Communicate with them, engage with them. They're people, and they will listen to your voice if your voice becomes loud enough. So back to the inspiration, inspire. So Seth Leibson, as you know, is a talented guy. He plays a trumpet, and he finished off the other evening. He played taps. We recorded it, and we wanted to finish off this show with a great tribute to all of you with taps from Seth.
three-star general, Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.